And in their public earnings calls, they are effectively saying that their app customers are worth 3 to 4 times their non-app customers.
What will help apps win going forward? The golden age of mobile is kind of over, at least the golden age of gigatons of free data for marketers and ad tech companies. Thanks to IDFA and GAID, app marketers had near free access to huge amounts of behavioral data. That was great for acquisition. It was also great for engagement, retention of users, customers, people. That era is almost over, and what's going to win now? To discuss, we've got a very special guest. He was CMO at SignalFix, CMO at Sprinklr, the social media company. He was a consultant for the legendary VC Andreessen Horowitz. He's at Red Hat. That's a very cool Linux. Loved it. I installed Red Hat way back in the day. He was at AppNexus. He was at legendary ad agency Young & Rubicam 5 years after I was born. Is now the CMO of Airship. I believe he once knew that as Urban Airship. His name, Thomas Buta. Welcome, Thomas.
Thank you, John. Pleasure to be here.
It is a real pleasure to have you. And we're going to get into all the stuff. We're going to talk about what's going on in mobile, what's happening with data and privacy and all that stuff. Before we get into that and dive into that, you just released a report, or you're releasing it today, the Consumer Mobile Report 2023. Last year, I believe your first report of this type, you talked to 9,000 consumers. This year, 11,000. It's all about data and privacy and personalization. What did you learn?
The report is really, really interesting, and not only do you see some broad trends across different countries, but you also see specific trends across different industries as well. But most fundamentally, what we learned is what people are willing to share and what they're not. And at the end of the day, it's surprising how much people, it's actually us, you know, are willing to share if, and this is the important if brands can demonstrate that they're going to use that data effectively. And what does that mean? That means that at the end of the day, they need to be able to leverage the data to create an experience that ultimately simplifies their life, makes things easier. So, you know, like what they said was what keeps people coming back to an app are the highest level benefits of simplifying my life. 35% of the people said it just simplifies my life, which is why we often say that, you know, good app experiences make life better. They actually do. And you know that when you also know it when it's not. The other thing that they say is super important is that it saves them time, right? So makes my life better, simplifies my life and saves me time are the top three reasons why people keep coming back. There's other data in terms of like the type of information that people are most willing to share. And I can give you like the top five if you want.
Go for it. Love to hear it.
All right. So first of all, they're again, more than willing to share, data in order to receive these personalized interactions and special incentives, if you will. And as long as the value is perceived to be mutual and respectful, then they're willing to share the following. Email addresses are at the top of the list. 85% of the respondents of these 11,000 people, 85% of them said that they are willing to share their email address.
Mm-hmm.
Next was interests relevant to the brand.
Useful.
After that was my name, you know, name, right? Fourth, 70% of people said that they're willing to share their communications preferences, sort of where, when, and how they're communicated with, right? This, I think that's more about control, which is great. That's the simplifying my life bit. And 66% of respondents are willing to share what they've browsed on a website or within the app. So that it gets interesting when you also then look at like what are the things that really, you know, bother people,
Or
what are they most willing to ignore, and actually email. the receipt of emails is top of that list. And
exactly.
Yeah.
I can buy that. I wonder, did you ask about phone number? I mean, like in this era of identifiers, device identifiers are going away for reasons of privacy, IDFA, GID. We talked about that, right? Email address is super useful, but it's generally not immediate for a lot of people and it gets buried in a lot of stuff. It is super useful. It's an identifier. It helps you connect somebody across multiple platforms. That's great. It's wonderful. Phone number is quite handy for all kinds of things, security, as well as immediate notifications and stuff like that. Did you ask that question?
So I'm confident that we did ask about phone number, and I don't have the answer immediately.
It's all good. We'll get it later. We'll throw it up on the screen here. And then if you're listening to the audio podcast, sorry, sucks to be you. Got to watch it on YouTube and you'll get the answer right there. Awesome. Thomas, thank you so much. You know what? Maybe we'll come back at the end. We'll talk a little bit more and we'll ask about the things people hated. That'd be interesting. Okay. But let's dive into this changing era in mobile growth. We talked about it already a couple times, right? What worked in the old era? You had IDFA, you had GAID, you had masses of behavioral data. You could hunt for whales, you know, really valuable users. You could hunt for niches of people, right? You could really segment people. So you could actually find very specific groups of people in large masses. What really worked in that era that we're leaving?
From what worked was the advantage that brands seemed to have because they had access to what I call dumb pipes that enabled them to push out what they thought at the time was somewhat, you know, relevant content because they understood that these people were a cohort of some form. And so that was a way that people went about, you know, targeting and driving levels of awareness and ultimately trying to enroll interest. But it was definitely more of a one-to-many in my view versus where I think we are now, which is the ability to get to much more of a one-to-one or certainly a much more personal and relevant place.
So when you were targeting and you had IDFA, then you had all kinds of data, let's say in a Facebook ad campaign about high value users and stuff like that. Now that is less, that's obscured, right? You can't see that anymore. So from a targeting perspective, that's tougher. Where are you talking about a relationship with a brand or an app being more one-to-one?
So within an app, what's interesting about an app? What's interesting about an app is everyone who has subscribed to an app is authenticated. So the brand actually knows who you specifically are. You're not just a mobile ID, right? You are actually a person who has provided information I just told you about and more mm-hmm. to that brand. And so you are known as, you know, as John, right? And and what your interests might be if you've expressed those relative to that brand, how you like to be communicated, how you don't like to be communicated, you know, what you find interesting and valuable, how are you willing to support that brand and become loyal. If in fact you're respected and you're rewarded. Mm-hmm. But if you start doing things that are somewhat creepy, like, I don't know, you know, you see it when people visit a website, right? Mm-hmm. All of a sudden you're being tracked because you've been cookied, right? And I don't know, I've had this very strange experience where I was looking for a mattress and all of a sudden I start getting all these mattress ads following me when I went to, you know, watch the Wimbledon highlights and all of that. Well, I bought the mattress, but I'm still getting those, you know, and I'm not going to get another mattress here for probably another 10 years. Like, so like, it's just not all that interesting, but within an app, you have the opportunity to, not only receive that information if you do proper onboarding, but continuously you have the opportunity to actually ask questions and do things like surveys, right? You know, is this information valuable? Was this offer valuable? Is this something you'd like to see more of or less of? Boom. That's really, really relevant because it's usually in the moment. It's very tidy. right?
It's really interesting that you mentioned that. And we'll get into the bigger topics as well. But there's a brand that everybody would recognize. I was talking to a marketer. It's got to be not too long ago now. And they were saying, you know, in all this era of digital data and information and what's available and everything, one of our best sources of information about which campaigns are working is user surveys. Right. It's an old school tactic. I mean, obviously applied in new digital ways, but it's been around for 100 years. Where did you hear about us? How did you find us? What are you most interested in? Those sorts of things. And that data they found was super, super valuable. Okay. Let's circle back onto where you were going. I mean, so obviously in a marketing sense, you're more one to many than you used to be when you had all the identifiers, but you're talking about in-app and you have first party data privileges. You can be more one to one. Talk about the value that that brings.
So what I can share is what we see across all of the leading brands that we work with at Airship, many of whom are public. And in their public earnings calls, they are effectively saying that their app customers are worth 3 to 4 times their non-app customers. Their app customers are 3.5 times more likely to make a purchase and a repeat purchase within a year than their non-app customers. So they're basically saying, you know, in this era of economic uncertainty, where people are trying to figure out how to operate more efficiently and, you know, do more with less, this is a value creation playbook. So that's, you know, that's something that we're trying to continue to share, right? That is huge. And I think, John, and maybe this is helpful for some of your, you know, your listeners here. A lot of people that have come from the classic, I don't know, communications world, if you will, you know, perhaps even an email, you know, world, they have looked at the app as a promotional channel. And yet, the app is actually in many ways the preferred destination. And when you think about there's a store, there's a website, and then there's the app. And the reason I say that is because, you know, the one device that you cannot do without, the one device that it's fine if you left your keys in your house or your apartment, but if somehow you left your phone and you went someplace, like you're lost.
Yep. I had that about 3 years ago. I had a short trip to San Francisco. I was in town for like 3-4 days and I forgot my phone at home. Unbelievable. Can't believe it. I forgot my phone at home. I had a pretty dumb car at the time and my phone was not my key. And so I could drive to the airport, I could park. And then I realized, and all of a sudden I'm like an idiot. I don't have access to the information I need to where, what gate to go. Right. My boarding pass isn't on my person. I have to print something out from a dead tree. I'm in San Francisco. I know the city pretty well, but I'm going somewhere I'm not familiar with. I mean, I have to ask or find or print out or whatever.
Right.
It's really, really challenging. I want to hit on what you talked about in terms of your customers who are many and who are super large in many cases, enterprise customers and their most valuable customers being in app. It's got to be about 5 years ago. I did a massive, massive report I called Unicorn Dinosaurs. Dinosaurs for big old companies, unicorns for smart. And putting those two together. And I took all Fortune 1000 companies and I found all of the apps for all of those companies. And then I did some analysis. How used are those apps? How many downloads do they have? How many reviews do they have? What are the reviews? Are they positive? Are they negative? And I correlated those companies' financial performance on the stock market with what they actually were doing on mobile. And I found a significant positive correlation between those companies that had a lot going on mobile. They had apps, they were in use, they were getting downloaded, and they were actually getting good reviews, and those who were doing well financially. And it was not always companies you would expect. I'm talking Caterpillar, earth moving machinery. And they had an app for service and usage and ownership experience and all that stuff, and probably for much more these days. So it is a big deal and it is super interesting. As we go into this new era of privacy and first-party data, how do you see the ways apps grow changing? I mean, you could throw money at it before, and you still can to some degree, right? But what's changing about how apps grow and get big in a privacy era? Is there something different about it?
So I think there's still some fundamental challenges that apps have, that brands have, really, in terms of optimizing their app. If you think about the app life cycle, it starts with discovery and onboarding, discovery, downloading, right, or acquiring the app. Then there's activating that app, registering, and then there's a long phase of engagement, to the point where you're driving loyalty and commerce and such. So the reason I talk about this being fundamental is because we see now many, many, many brands advertising the call to action as download the app. Mm-hmm. So in many cases, like, the good stuff is in the app. QSRs, typically, are encouraging you to use their app because mm-hmm. they're driving loyalty. And I mean,
you're a second class citizen if you're not using your app at Starbucks. I mean, 100%. You're supposed to order on the go and arrive just as it's ready and pick it up, and there you go.
100%. And, to the point now where I just learned this week, because I'm flying into the airport next week, that the Santa Barbara airport, which is a small airport, it is not accepting papered boarding passes.
What?
Right? I mean, what? It's sort of like, okay, this is how it is. So we're not, our scanning machines are going to be, set up for the, it's just going to simplify the boarding process. It's going to speed it along. And
tell that to my 87-year-old mother.
Yeah, I know. It's like, boy, when I arrived, 4 hours late for a family wedding in Tallahassee. I fortunately was with my 85-year-old mother, and it was 2 a.m. And we're like, mm-hmm. where are the taxis? They said, you have to use an Uber. And she says, I don't have Uber on my phone. I'm like, it's okay, Mom, I've got it. But yes, I get it. So anyway, the fundamentals. So what we're seeing is this huge drive to get people to download the app because the good stuff's in the app. And again, it's a known individual, and there's significant value opportunity for both consumer and brand if you do that. And so, brands are advertising to download the app. People go to the app store still as the primary place to discover an app, and they download. And so you've got these growth marketing teams who were like, yay, our job was done. We just drove the number of downloads. But the actual retention or the number of active users continues to be flat, mm-hmm. despite mm-hmm. the fact that there's more and more and more apps, and there's more and more people focusing on people to download those apps. Mm-hmm. The actual number of active app users is flat. And so the onus is on, what I call life after download. The onus is on onboarding, adoption, understanding those customers deeply enough to ensure that they have experiences that are rising to the bar that people have said, which is most important, which is, can you help simplify my life and make my life better?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's the biggest challenge.
That's a massive challenge, and we have a lot of gaming industry people who listen to this podcast. We're obviously talking more about the brand side, retail, quick service, restaurant, that sort yep. of stuff. But it's a challenge everywhere, right? What is it? Retention is like 5% across the board after a month, right? People still using your app. And of course, now on iOS, for sure, if you're not using an app for too long and your settings are set up in a default way, it'll just disappear off your home screen. You can always call it back, but it'll just go away. Talk about this onboarding experience. What can you do in an onboarding experience that gets somebody off to a fast start, gets them seeing value quickly, and starts the critical beginnings of a habit?
So just to put some data behind what you said, based on the research that we've done on the average activation rates over the course of, say, four or five months by various industries, on average across, call it a dozen industries, day one activation is like 23%, and it drives down to 8% on average after day 30. That varies by industry. I'd say the lowest performers are at 5%, shopping apps, food and drink, apps. The highest performers are more like news and magazines, mm-hmm. and finance, which mm-hmm. probably have a little more value, as it were. So what can you do to affect that? There's the onboarding process, needs to occur immediately. Mm-hmm. And if you're not interacting with that app in the first day with that customer in the first day or two, they're gone. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or the likelihood is that they'll be gone. So mm-hmm. it's a sort of immediacy. And then it's a little bit of, think about it as relationship building. The first question you ask is not, can you share your location data? Why? You have to help people understand why. And so it's a relationship and you're just trying to get to know somebody. And so you're going to ask some basic, not too invasive questions. And ultimately you'll get to learn more because you will have started to, participate in this, mutual, respectful, and ideally rewarding, relationship.
I've always kind of viewed it as dating, and some apps ask you for your hand in marriage immediately, and others take you out first and get to know you a little bit.
Yeah, first and second impressions are everything, right? 57% of consumers decide whether to delete an app after only a couple of uses. Mm-hmm. That's why I said, if you don't get them quickly, and if you're not interacting with them appropriately, then they're gone.
I have deleted apps on first open when I just didn't like the look of it, the feel of it, or it asked me for too much information right off the top. I totally see that.
100%. It's like me. It's like, look, I have I meet people all the time. And honestly, especially in a social setting, if the first question they ask me is, what do you do? I actually sort of go the other way. And so, yeah. I think so the onboarding process is important. And frankly, the onboarding process begins even before they've downloaded the app. It's sort of how you reflect that value proposition everywhere you are promoting it. Mm-hmm, and especially in the places where people seem to find apps more than in any other place, which is the app store. Mm-hmm, one of the things that we do through an acquisition we made a year ago is what's known as app store optimization. And a lot of people who don't understand it think of it as, well, it's like search. You optimize for search. Well, actually, the volatility inside the App Store in terms of how this sort of valuable real estate is managed by the OSs, by Apple and Google, is a lot different than how they manage a web search. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, the way we think about it is it's less about web search best practices and more about it's an e-commerce site and the way in which you are continuously adapting to the algorithms and continuously testing, how you are, you know, reflecting the value prop of what you have, from visuals to messages to where and when you show up to the keywords that you optimize against. All of that, you know, becomes super important. And so what's interesting is, if let's just, you know, so growth marketers get people to download, boom, you know, hooray, we've been successful. And yet, what do we say? You know, the average is, you know, 8% across all industries of people who remain a customer after 30 days. That's a lot of waste.
Yeah.
And yet out the other side of it, those people who remain customers are worth 3 to 4 times. It's like, wow, what if we were to find more people that look like those most valuable people and actually do better, tighter, more personalized, relevant promotion to get more of those type of people to download. And we optimized for onboarding, right? And adoption and understanding immediately, so that we're more likely to, you know, to grow that line to come out the other side with more valuable people, right? It's just this continuous cycle.
It was an interesting comment that you made about App Store optimization, which I hate the term, by the way, because it doesn't mean Google Play optimization. So, but it's there and it's stuck and we're not getting rid of it. So it is what it is. But App Store optimization is really interesting, because if I'm a platform, if I'm Google or if I'm Apple, I don't want those apps to be successful in getting lots of downloads who lose a lot of people right away. I don't want those apps that are successful in getting a ton of downloads on my platform to be apps that don't monetize very well or don't engage very well. People don't stick with them and use them and all that stuff, right? And so Google and Apple will have access to some of those insights there. And I'm pretty sure some of that will factor into their rankings as well. We have to land the plane a little bit here. Sure. And maybe let's end with this. One more small question after this, but maybe we'll end with this topic. Let's say I'm starting out and I'm doing a new app. Do you have some insights for me? It's one thing if I'm a massive brand and I'm going to say, hey, I'm adding the app to it. It's another thing if I'm, you know, I've got Clash of Clans and I'm going to add another game, but I'm starting out. I'm pretty new. Give that person some tips on how to start a new app and build it into something successful.
Okay. So I mentioned one thing, and that is you have to be super clear about your value proposition. In other words, what's in it for me, right? And you need to be clear about that right up front. So from how you communicate it in sort of mass media, as it were, to actually how you represent yourselves in the App Store, most brands don't answer the question of why. And if you can deliver a value proposition that answers that question why in multiple ways, you are more likely to have a relationship that, you know, that you can build upon. Mm-hmm. So what, you know, mm-hmm. why is this valuable to me? Because it helps do this. Why is this particularly valuable to my type of consumer? Because we can help curate this. You can as a loyal user, you would get, I don't know, 10% off of whatever. You'll get first look at new offers, new items, whatever it might be. In other words, continuously helping people understand why is this valuable to me, and which then gets into, you know, why should I share this information? If you can demonstrate sharing that information will help create more value for you, then people are willing to do it. For example, like cut to, I don't know, 2 years ago, if you download the Home Depot, okay, you bought a house, right? You're going to wind up in Home Depot every weekend, right? If the first question they asked you when you downloaded the app is, you know, what's your location? It would be a little bit odd because you know where the store is. You wouldn't understand it if you would be willing to share your location data. Cut to 2 years now, right? Their ads are promoting their in-store map because they are helping to guide you from the home to the parking lot to where the items are that you are looking for, how to express checkout, because nobody can find anything.
Yeah. Most common question in a Home Depot, where is X?
Exactly. Exactly. And so now, I mean, literally, that's what their commercial is. It's about that melding of that sort of digital experience with that physical in-store experience. It's a beautiful, they've done a beautiful job of it. I mean, it really is. And now you understand why it matters to have your location data, because like I'm being directed in a Google Map type of a way, you know, to aisle C, row 4, you know, top shelf, right?
Get the ladder.
yeah, exactly.
Excellent. Tom, this has been a lot of fun. This has been great. You recently started your own podcast, did you not?
We did, yes. It's called Masters of Max. Max stands for Mobile App Experience. And yeah, it's just, you know, I think like you, you know, we all have a lot to learn from each other. And my hope is to be able to facilitate a conversation with people who are seeing it from, you know, from the inside, and and they're, you know, they're practicing this new art form, this new form of commerce, and they're able to share their experiences with others. So
very cool.
Yeah, it's called Masters of Max. It's on, you know, it's on all the usual, you know, Spotify's and Apple and podcasts and et cetera. We have some pretty cool guests on there. Yeah.
Nice. All the usual suspects. Awesome. Exactly. Thank you so much, Tom.
John, thank you. And I have to download this 5-year report you did. This report you did 5 years ago, Unicorn Dinosaurs. I love the name, and I'm looking forward to seeing how that your predictions then hold up today.